Welcome to On DoD on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, sponsored by Microsoft Federal. Now your host, Federal News Radio DoD reporter, Jared Serbu.
5 minutes past the hour on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Good afternoon, Jared Serbu here. Thanks for joining us for another edition of On DoD. And our show today is a little bit different. This week is more along the lines of after DoD than on DoD. What happens to service members who leave the military after this period of very high operational tempo, to put it mildly, and try to make the transition into the civilian workforce, with maybe a stop along the way in the higher education system? The unemployment rate for young veterans who've served in Iraq and Afghanistan is high. It spiked to 13.3% in the latest numbers from the Bureau of Labor Statistics. And today we're going to focus mostly on one bump in the road in that military to civilian career transition, the higher education step. When it comes to paying for college, Congress has solved that problem, at least in theory. The relatively generous post-9/11 GI Bill gives recent veterans essentially a full-ride scholarship for an undergraduate degree, paying veterans' tuition up to the rate of the most expensive public university in a veteran's home state. But there's reason to believe those benefits aren't being used the way Congress imagined. Some studies show as many as 88% of veterans never make it through college, and many veterans groups and members of Congress say the benefits are being siphoned off by shady for-profit colleges that see returning veterans as, quote, walking dollar signs because of all that GI Bill funding. We're going to talk about all those issues and a lot of other aspects of the military to civilian career transition today with Gunnar Councilman. He's a former Marine Corps intelligence officer who served in Iraq, Bosnia, and the Horn of Africa. He went on to found a company called Fidelis Inc., set up explicitly to help veterans get through this transition period. And he joins us by phone from his office in San Francisco. Hey, Gunnar, sorry about the long introduction. Thanks for coming on Federal News Radio.
No, Jared, it's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
So we're going to talk about your company and what you do later in the show, but I want to focus, at least in the first couple segments here, on some of the obstacles I mentioned and probably a lot I didn't mention in the intro. And like I said, in theory, college is paid for. That's one big obstacle in the higher education system that a lot of kids have with skyrocketing tuition prices, even at public institutions, that, again, in theory, Iraq and Afghanistan veterans shouldn't have. Talk me through some of the reasons you think that the degree completion rate is so low at the moment.
Well, it really comes down to product and market fit. So if you think about what colleges are wonderful at, it's about taking 18-year-old kids and helping them grow into adults and get their lives started. If you think about what veterans need, people who've served 1, 2, 3 tours in the military, they're already adults. They've been brought up by the military, and what they're typically looking to do is to specifically use their educational experience to prepare them specifically for a new civilian career, new civilian professional life. And if you think about just how college is currently set up to do that for anyone, it's not that great. So about 50% of college grads are still unemployed 6 months after graduation. That's a pretty shocking statistic. And when you take a look at the mindset of a new veteran who's served a couple tours overseas and is coming back and trying to use college to get access into the workforce, when they look at that and they look ahead, they often ask the question, why should I stay? Why should I put in all this work if there's not a clear pathway towards the things that I'm interested in?
So why is that? Is that VA's job or DoD's job to prepare students, to impress on them the importance of that higher education degree?
Well, I mean, you touched on it a bit. One of the problems that you face is that DoD has a slice of the problem, the VA has a slice of the problem, the Department of Labor has a slice of the problem, and the Department of Education has a slice of the problem. It doesn't fall neatly in any individual bucket. And it's notoriously difficult for the agencies to collaborate and coordinate their activities around it. But at the end of the day, that statistic that I pointed out, that 50% of college grads are still unemployed 6 months after graduation, that fundamentally is the big problem. When I talk about product market misfit, it's that the soldiers returning are looking to use college for one really specific purpose, which is to get them ready for the next step in their career. And colleges, the good, many great colleges, simply that's not the sole thing that they do and not the sole thing that they do well. So it's really a matter of educating service members on how to use that college experience and then supplement that college experience with effectively building their professional network and then figuring out exactly what their kind of pathway is going to look like in their civilian career, in order to take advantage of the college experience to make sure that they actually land where they're looking to land.
Let's stay on that idea of the government's role and the federal government's role and responsibility here for just a second. You know, I've heard members of Congress and others talk about this idea of a reverse boot camp so that there's actually a more involved process once veterans are transitioning out of the military to let them know what civilian life is going to be. I've heard other people say, you know, you spend weeks or months turning a civilian into a soldier and, you know, a couple hours trying to reverse that process to transition a soldier back into a civilian. Is that part of the problem?
It certainly is. I mean, the military does, and I've heard this from businesses across the country. So we consider our most important constituent the employer who's going to hire our students. And so we work really tightly with them, understanding what their challenges are in finding and recruiting the right folks. And your point about the reverse boot camp process, the fact is the military does an incredible, better than any other industry, does an incredible job of preparing soldiers, sailors, airmen, and Marines for that particular context, right? The military, think about bringing on 300,000 new employees per year, getting them trained up and then putting them into the workforce within the military. No other industry in the country could come anywhere close to that and not do it as effectively. The problem is that people talk about translating those skills into the civilian context. Many of the skills simply don't translate any more than you could take Steve Jobs out of Apple and put him on a submarine. It's equally difficult to take someone off of a submarine and put them into Silicon Valley and have them be effective. Mm-hmm. There is a significant retraining requirement, just as there would be if you were to take somebody, like I said, from a civilian industry and put them into a military context. So it's not really about de-boot campification, in my opinion. It's about teaching soldiers which parts of their experience they need to double down on and really take with them. And what are the things that they need to supplement their experience with? Because they're going to need to start over in some ways. Anybody who moves from one industry to another needs to start over in some ways to retool, re-equip, and figure out how does it work around here. Each industry and each industrial cluster functions fairly differently from the other. The military has certain really well laid out kind of cultural mechanisms for getting things done. Those things don't always work in hospitality. They're not always going to work in Detroit and in manufacturing. It's a question of figuring out what have I got that does work, and then what do I need to build to make myself effective in this new context.
I understand that concept of the military culture not translating sort of in the abstract, but I don't want to put you on the spot here, but can you give me maybe an example from your own experience or from the experience of ex-soldiers, sailors, airmen, Marines that you've worked with where that really doesn't work in the civilian workplace?
Oh, well, here's a great example, and I've gotten this from at least half a dozen of the folks that we've interviewed about this very topic. In the military, feedback is usually extremely direct, right? If you've screwed something up, you know it, and it's told you in a very explicit way. In many civilian industries, the feedback is much more subtle, much more passive-aggressive is the term that a lot of people use to describe it. It's often beating around the bush, and so you'll see a lot of soldiers and sailors, airmen, and Marines not pick up on when they're starting to fall off track because they're used to being snatched up and told. That's one example. Another example is just, and this has changed a little bit in some parts of the military, but not across the board, is that most civilian industries function in large part based on networks, right, versus based on strict hierarchy and chain of command.
Right.
Working within networks, getting things done through friends, getting things done through trusted relationships is not just something that is not formally taught in most military contexts. It's actually formally frowned upon in most military organizations. Getting around the chain of command by using a relationship isn't looked well upon. But in many civilian industries, that's not just the best way to get something done. In many cases, it's the only way to get something done. So it's nuances like that that we always hear from soldiers, the things that they struggle with. And when you talk to hiring managers, when you talk to HR folks, when you ask the seven whys and you keep digging, eventually you get down to, a lot of the concerns come down to, is this person going to know how to get things done here? Across the board, if you're coming out of the military with an honorable discharge and a good service record, and you've got a deployment or two under your belt, people are going to assume a lot of really good things about you. They're going to assume character. They're going to assume that you're trustworthy. They're going to assume that you're a good leader, and they're going to wait for you to prove that you're a great leader, and they're going to assume that you're a good team member and you know how to put other people ahead of yourself. That gives every single soldier a leg up on their civilian counterparts, because they don't assume that about other people. They assume quite the opposite in many cases. The job of the soldier then is to figure out, okay, if those are the positive things that they're going to assume about me, those things are often nice to have in these jobs. What is it that they need to have, and how can I prove to them that I'm that guy?
A lot of things you're mentioned sound like cultural issues that, as you were alluding to before, just are not taught in college. I want to dig into that a little bit more when we come
Absolutely.
Back. We're going to take a quick break here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. You're listening to On DoD. I'm Jared Serbu. We're talking to Gunnar Councilman, the founder and CEO of Fidelis Inc. and a former Marine Corps intelligence officer. Back in just a minute. Thanks for listening to Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jared Serbu. This is On DoD. We're talking this week about the challenges involved in the military to civilian career transition with Gunnar Councilman. He's a former Marine Corps intelligence officer who served in Iraq, Bosnia, the Horn of Africa. He went on to found a company called Fidelis Inc. that's set up to help veterans get through that process. And we're talking to him by phone from his office in San Francisco. And Gunnar, before the break, we were talking about some of those cultural issues. This is maybe putting it a little bit too strongly, but it sounds to me like basic office politics. And that's as you were saying, that is not something you learn if, say, you went into the Navy when you were 18 years old, spent 10 years in, and got used to this very hierarchical authority structure, and you miss those subtle social office politics, social cues. There's nobody teaching these kids those things. They're not kids anymore by the time they get out, as you alluded to. I shouldn't call them kids. But there's nobody teaching these young soldiers, sailors, airmen, and Marines those skills, either college or the military, when they exit the service, right?
No, not at all. I mean, that's one of the things that we started Fidelis to address, frankly, is that when we talk to 100 veterans and ask them what are the biggest challenges that you face, and during the transition, it's that kind of stuff that came up as the main thing. It's not, it's hilarious. It's not calculus. It's not econometrics. It's not the hard sciences or the soft social sciences. It's not the writing. Those are not the things people look back on and say, man, I really struggled with that. It's all this very subtle, in many cases, as you said, social pieces of the workplace and pieces of college, kind of understanding how it works around here. It seemed to us that we need to learn that from other veterans.
Veterans who've been through the process.
That's right. So people who are just a couple years ahead of us in the process, it comes down to mentorship, and it comes down to bottling great advice and then delivering it at just the right time for the soldier. If you think about all the speeches that you've gotten over the years from people giving advice, a lot of times, if you're not experiencing that problem right now, the advice can kind of wash over you, right? And you can just kind of miss why it's so important. But if we build a flexible framework whereby we've got this stuff bottled and we've got connectivity to other human beings who've been through this before you, then when you're struggling with those kinds of issues, we can deliver up just the right kind of a powerful and emotional advice that you need, coupled with connection to the kinds of people who can help you overcome whatever struggle you've got. And it's one of those things where, frankly, just the idea of reaching out for help and engaging mentors and engaging advisors in your career, or even planning a career, a lot of that stuff is just stuff that you just do not do in the military, right? But it is the very stuff that separates the people who rise fast and who end up getting security in the civilian world. It's the ability to engage other people in their trajectory and in their success. So everything that we build is about helping folks figure out what that pathway is from where they are to where they want to get to, and then surrounding themselves with the right kinds of people and the right learning objectives along the way.
I want to dig more into that concept of bottled advice and how you do that a little bit later in the show. But to stick with college Sure. for a minute, tell me a little bit about your experience coming out of the military. I understand you went to Harvard Business School coming right out of the military. Did you experience some of these things, some of that, I guess I would call it culture shock, for lack of a better term?
I did. I left Iraq in to July of 2003, so just after the march to Baghdad.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a wild experience going straight from that environment into a place like Harvard Business School. I actually wrote the original plan for Fidelis. It had a wildly different name at the time. It was Warriors and Poets, because I recognized that there was a pretty big gulf between the preparation that I'd had and that most of my compatriots had had who were coming out of the military and non-technical backgrounds, compared with folks who were coming out of McKinsey, Goldman Sachs, etc. And it was kind of then that I started to say, okay, well, the first thing we need is some technical preparation. But then I started looking around and realizing how differently things were structured from a cultural and how things work perspective. And it took a long time, but starting to peel back the layers of the onion and try to get to the core of what the matter is kind of where Fidelis came from. So it's been a labor of love since around 2003.
And so I mentioned in the intro to the show this hour that study that mentioned that 88% of students coming out of Iraq and Afghanistan don't complete a 4-year degree. If you accept that as accurate, which you can tell me whether you do or not, you are in the minority there. I mean, what did it for you, and what's not happening for this other 88%?
Well, that's interesting. So I'll be honest with you. I think that I spoke earlier in the program about the fit between what the programs have and what the soldiers need. I'll tell you what I don't think it is. I don't think that the reason for the dropout rates is talent.
Right.
That's not the issue. In fact, if you take a look at the soldier population and compare it with the average population in the United States, you'll find soldiers to be slightly more academically inclined than the average American, according to ASVAB scores. So it's not talent. It comes down to the fit between what the soldiers need and what the programs have. And I think it all comes down to saying, okay, I need high quality education. I need an active mechanism to build my network, and I need to have a clear pathway towards objectives. To have those three things, I need to have a way to figure out what my objectives for the school, for the experience is. We as soldiers are inclined from the get-go to do backwards planning, right? Okay, if this is where I need to get to, what do I need to do just before I get there? Mm-hmm. When do I need to cross the line of departure in order to get myself on a trajectory that's going to get me to my objective? I'll be frank that in most college environments, that is a really hard thing to do. They are actively built not to be that goal-oriented, but to be more places where people can meander, can explore, can discover. That's simply not what soldiers need to do. If you think about a guy who's 24 years old, has been on 2 pumps to Iraq, he's getting out of the Marine Corps probably as a sergeant, getting out of the Army as a sergeant, sitting in class with a 17-year-old learning calculus, it's a culture shock. It's a value shock. It's simply not the appropriate place for that person in many cases. I actually think that the college experience of being on that campus and being in that place where you're forced to meet with all kinds of different people, work with all kinds of different people, I think that's a really important thing for most soldiers. But I think it's critical that there be a framework around us so that we can have that goal-oriented, outcome-oriented, lockstep approach to planning that we're accustomed to. And colleges simply don't have that. And I think that's really what's driving the dropout rate.
There has been a lot of attention since the post-9/11 GI Bill first went into effect in 2009 on the part of members of Congress and veterans groups on the issue of for-profit colleges. And these folks would contend that high dropout rate we were talking about is especially concentrated in for-profit colleges, who they view, as I said in the intro, as considering students under the post-9/11 GI Bill to basically be walking money bags, that this is a cottage industry that sprouted up to basically take this money, not provide an education of any value. In some cases, unaccredited institutions are going to turn students out the other end that don't have a degree that does them any good, or they're going to get so frustrated that they just leave. Any thoughts on any of that? Your views on this for-profit college industry in general, as it relates to service members?
Yeah, I've seen it for years, and I think that the criticisms that Harkin and Senator Durbin have levied against the industry are fair and fairly founded. I think the biggest issue of that is the 90-10 rule. There's a rule that essentially gives for-profit institutions a massive incentive to recruit military folks because they need to get 10% of their revenue from non-Title IV sources. That means non-Pell grants and non-Stafford loans.
And GI Bill counts right now, 10%.
It does indeed. And so that means that for every – if you're trying to grow – right, which all of these institutions are trying to grow and are under some pressure to do so from Wall Street. If you're trying to grow, you need to grow by getting, if you get one more soldier, that allows you to grow nine other folks. So in some cases, the 90-10 constraints is the primary constraint that they've got around growth.
You mentioned Senator Harkin. I was at a press conference a few weeks ago when they were announcing the transfer of the GIBill.com website, which was run basically as a, you know, they insist it was designed to impersonate a government website and funnel students into these for-profit colleges. And I asked him, you know, it can't be that every single for-profit school is basically a shady operation. His response back to me was, you know, it is a race to the bottom in this industry. If you do try to operate ethically, if you don't use misleading recruiting tactics, you're not going to survive because this has just grown into such a bustling cottage industry out there, and there are plenty of people who are willing to behave unethically. And any thoughts on that? Are there good actors in this business as far as you can tell?
Well, I think it's really interesting that he said that because I think that he's right, that it is a race to the bottom. And I also think that anytime you've got a race to the bottom, though, that there are going to be outliers on the really bad side and outliers on the good side. Harkin himself in the report that just got issued, I've called out, and I'll name names, called out American Public Education, which has American Military University. I believe it called out Strayer for being counterexamples, right? So I don't have an opinion. I don't have specific personal experience with the education that these folks are providing in many cases. But I thought it was interesting that in the big report that's been coming for a long time, that he actually did make some exceptions and say that there are some folks doing good. I still always use the referral test, right? So I think that the ultimate question in this is like scale of 1 to 10, how likely would you be to refer your son or daughter to one of these schools? And for my referrals, I refer to the students to colleges that I know and respect their alumni. I would much rather refer soldiers to state schools. I would much rather refer soldiers to private nonprofit colleges simply because I know what they can expect from those things, and it's still a bit of an open question for me in terms of what they can expect from some of these kinds of folks.
Need to take another break here. When we come back, I want to stay on the topic of for-profit organizations because you operate one. We're going to talk about why you are not shady, as folks seem to think these for-profit colleges are. Gunnar Councilman is a former Marine Corps intelligence officer who is now the founder and CEO of Fidelis Inc. It's a company that's designed to help veterans get through the transition period from the military to college and eventually on to civilian careers. You're listening to On DoD on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jared Serbin. We are back on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. You're listening to On DoD. I'm Jared Serbu. Thanks for joining us. Talking this week about the transition of service members coming out of Iraq and Afghanistan into civilian careers and into college. Our guest is Gunnar Councilman. He's a former Marine Corps intelligence officer, now the founder and CEO of a startup company called Fidelis out in San Francisco. He's joining us by phone from his offices there. And Gunnar, we were talking in the last segment about the for-profit college industry. I was surprised when I started reading up on your company, which, by the way, this is probably the first show we've ever done an entire hour with one person from the private sector. But the way this came about, I'll just mention, is one of Gunnar's employees read a story that I had done earlier and made some comments on it on our website on the for-profit college industry. I looked into the company and thought they were doing some really interesting things. But basically, as I said, your mission is to help students transition from the military into civilian careers and into college. You're doing this with a for-profit business model. It sounds like most of the stuff that you're doing, people would normally associate with a nonprofit organization. Tell me about that model and how that works.
My whole thing is that if you want to solve really hard problems, technology is often really important. And companies are the right vehicle with which to build great technology solutions. If you think about the light bulb, the automobile, Google, Facebook, think about all the technologies that we have in our lives. They were all built by companies. The problem that I've got with companies issuing degrees is the race to the bottom thing that Senator Durbin mentioned, or Senator Harkin mentioned to you. Mm-hmm. It's that when you have the ability to print the degree itself, your incentive as a company is to print as many degrees as you possibly can, right? And that's not in keeping with the concept of the degree, which is supposed to signify clear, it's supposed to signal something to people who see that you've got that. So what we've done is really say, okay, we're going to be a technology company. And what we're going to do is we're going to partner with great universities to help them do the things that they can't do to make their programs more effective for transitioning soldiers. The idea is basically to say we partner with the universities and with the companies in the back end to build a scalable solution that creates an end-to-end program for students leaving the military. And in the case of our 2+2+ program, earning their general education credits while they're on active duty through us, but from the partner university. So never earning a credit from Fidelis. That's the key to keeping our incentives aligned with those of the students, is that they're earning credits from the partner college. As soon as they get out of the military, we then place them into the best traditional college that we can get them into. We think it's critical that most folks spend some time on college campuses. We coach them through to graduation, providing some of the social connectivity, some of the connection to industry, and some of the connection to alumni that they wouldn't get otherwise. Coach them through to graduation, pick them up in the back end, and place them into companies. But if you think about the companies having a great workforce, companies being able to tap into the kind of talent that's coming out of the military, we're a super early stage startup. We've got 70 students. We've got 65 really great companies that have partnered with us in the back end, and we've just gotten started. The demand that we find from great companies for well-trained, well-qualified, well-mentored and coached military graduates is really tremendous. And so what we need to do and what we're doing is building the technological infrastructure that enables that personalized pathway through the right kinds of education into those industries.
Who are some of these colleges that you're partnering with right now, and how do you make money for your investors out of this arrangement while still maintaining, you know, your interests aligned with the interest of the service members that you're supposed to be serving?
And that's really the key, right, is making sure that the interests stay aligned. So the universities we're working with are University of California system, UCLA for our pre-MBA, for our pre-MBA boot camp. Arizona State we're working with for a degree completion program for primarily staff NCOs who have got a hodgepodge of credits from around the country and are looking to complete at a tier one state, you know, nonprofit college. And we think Arizona State's among the best at that. We've got a number of other universities that we're kind of in discussions with, but it's a bit early to announce. And the way that our business model works and the way that we keep it really tightly aligned with the student is that there are around 12 different activities that a university has to do in order to be a university. There's placing students in the back end, there's tutoring, there's teaching, there's remediation, there's coaching and mentoring and advising. And if you think about all the different things that a university has, teaching class and accrediting those classes and issuing transcripts are just a couple of those activities. What we do is we partner with the university to do the activities that we can do in a more effective and more cost-effective way than they can. They do the things that they do best, which is teach the class, accredit the class, and issue the credits, and we share the tuition. They give us a portion of the tuition to pay for all those expenses that they don't have to incur.
You mentioned Arizona State, my alma mater. If I'm a returning service member...
Go Sun Devils.
Go Sun Devils. If I'm a returning service member and I go through your program, bottom line it for me, how is my experience going through that four-year undergraduate degree going to be different than the route I took, which is, you know, you're basically on your own and you go through classes the way it's set up by the university?
First thing a service member does when he or she finds us is they choose a transition coach. And that person is like a concierge. This is someone who's been down this road before and who's an expert at guiding people from the military through the appropriate kind of college and into the civilian sector. Under the guidance of that coach, then the student will build a personal advisory board of mentors. And that's a combination of people that the student already knows and has pre-existing relationships with, along with people that he meets through Fidelis. So our technology platform, actively suggests the kinds of people that the service member should connect with and the kinds of people that are likely to take the service member's call based on a couple of different factors. That way they're building their professional network before they get to school, while they're in school, so that it's there for them when they need it, when they start going out and looking for a job. Then under the guidance of the team, the student sets kind of incremental goals that build towards their long-term goals. Those goals are essentially learning applications. So just like you've got a phone in your pocket right now that probably has apps on it, and there's an app for that, we've built a platform that allows us and others to build customized learning experiences to solve for all of those niche learning needs that we find service members look back on and say, man, I wish I'd known this. I wish I'd understood how this worked. All of that stuff is bottled there in the learning apps, but it's available to the soldier when and if they need it. And then the final piece, and I think, in my view, the most important piece, is the employer connectivity. So as the student accomplishes these goals and builds out their portfolio of capabilities, which is in some ways like an enhanced resume of capabilities or a kind of a 21st century transcript, so to speak, they build out their capabilities portfolio, which is broken down into a couple different categories, talents, right, things that are natural and easy, personality type, the knowledge sets you've mastered, the skill sets you've mastered, and then ways of scoring your network. That gives employers, while you're studying, the ability to micro-target the exact kinds of students that they think are going to make them more competitive, right? Which fundamentally, if you think about the problem that you've, the technology problem that you've got to solve in order to help solve the military unemployment problem, is you've got to help employers find those people who are going to make their companies more competitive, and you have to make it clear to the soldier, what is that company looking for? What do they need that they don't have right now? And how can I go and build those capabilities for myself such that I rise to the top of their search?
And we need to take one more quick break here. We will be back in just a moment with Gunnar Councilman. He is the CEO and founder of Fidelis Inc., also a former Marine Corps intelligence officer. We're talking about the military to civilian career transition. We'll be back with one final segment in just a moment on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. This is on DOD. I'm Jared Serbin. We are back on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. You're listening to On DOD. I'm Jared Serbu, talking this week about the military to civilian career transition, how to make it better. There's one company that is trying to do that in an interesting for-profit model, a Silicon Valley startup, venture capital-backed firm called Fidelis Inc. That company's founder and CEO is Gunnar Councilman. He's also a former Marine Corps intelligence officer. And Gunnar, before we broke, you were starting to talk about the employer side of all this once someone gets through college. But there's obviously a broad range of employers out there who want to hire veterans. I'm imagining a lot of these jobs may or may not require a college education. Employers may or may not want those things. So veterans have this choice here of whether or not to go to college and also understanding what employers are looking for, depending on what they want to do.
Absolutely.
So what are some of those factors that you think returning veterans need to be trying to sort out in their minds, and what have you found in talking to employers?
I mean, obviously there was a time when just going to college and just graduating from college was the answer. That was a good enough answer. I think that it's kind of the writing on the wall that's changed. It's really critical that soldiers especially who are making this transition from one industry to another, in most cases, be really thoughtful about figuring out what their goals are. And it's one of those funny things that, like, easier said than done, right? You have to build your network. You have to talk to people. You have to reach out to strangers in many cases to figure out what it is that they do and what it is that they like about what they do. We're, of course, through Fidelis, are working to simplify that process and to make it a lot easier and a lot faster for folks. But the idea of saying, I'm going to school, and having that be a good enough answer, the question is, okay, which school are you going to? That's going to mean a lot to a lot of employers, and I can talk about that in a bit. What are you going to study, and is that degree, is that school a pathway towards the kinds of things that you're really interested in doing? It's gotten a lot more complex in the last 10 years, and it's gotten a lot more complex, especially since 2008 when the economy crashed and the economy got to kind of the point that it's in right now. So the other half of the question you asked was about employers and what do they think about this whole thing? And I can tell you that we've heard it enough from enough employers to where I feel comfortable stating it as, if not fact, at least received wisdom, that a lot of what you study in college may not be in all cases directly like something specific that employer is going to be looking for, but what they're using school as, what they're using college as, is a really clear filter and a screen. They're basically saying, which school did the person go to, how well did they do there, and what did they study? And then they're saying, okay, how hard is that to do? And the harder it is, the more well-respected the degree is. This is one of the reasons why I think that the siren song of ease and convenience, which is what you always hear in the radio and see on the internet next to the news articles you're reading, is right. Like, start at this school, it's easy and convenient. You know what? If it's easy and convenient, employers are not going to respect it.
And I wonder if that's one of the things that VA or DOD or both need to be communicating to students as they exit the military, the message that if you want to go to college, it's going to be hard, but you know what? You know how to do hard stuff.
You know, I think they should, and I don't know that they don't, right? So I'm not criticizing criticizing them for not doing it, but you're darn right. Like, if it was easy, everyone would do it, right? If it was easy, it wouldn't be worth much, right? Everybody who's been through military training knows that part of what makes it valuable is that it's hard. Every time you go to a new school in the military, at least a new significant school, there's some kind of a screening event, right? Ranger school. If somebody's wearing a ranger tab, you know what that means. If someone's a SEAL, you know what that means. It's meaningful because it's difficult. It's not one of the things that says, oh, it's easy and convenient, come through us. It's supposed to be hard. And I think that the government is, in some ways, has its hands tied because it's legally not allowed to make recommendations about which schools you attend and all that kind of stuff. But if it could just deliver that message that says easy and convenient when it comes to school, it's kind of like easy and convenient when it comes to boot camp, right? It just doesn't work.
In the couple minutes that we have left, your company, you've obviously been able to convince some pretty big name public institutions that your model is a good way to get returning soldiers through the system successfully. I know you're brand new. You're a brand new Silicon Valley startup, but do you know enough yet to know whether this is the methodologies, the procedures you've put in place, the technology you've built is really going to work?
That's a good question. So I'll tell you what we know is that it works when we do it at a small scale. So we've run our first class through, and we're going to be slowly expanding programs and slowly expanding the number of students that we're working with over the next year. It works at a small scale, but the thing we're trying to do is to build a scalable solution to this problem, something that works for everyone. And to do that, you have to stay super focused, and you have to stay very tight and make sure that every single person coming through has a world-class experience and has world-class outcomes. So to us, it's essential that we learn from every student that we work with how to optimize the platform, optimize, grow with the right kinds of teaching partners, which are the universities that teach the courses, and make sure we grow slow enough such that we don't stumble along the way. It's more important to us as a team that we get to 100% success rate rather than that we serve more and more and more students. So I guess like any new technology, time will tell to see how well it scales, but I'm really excited about the results we've gotten from our first cohort of students who are kind of all heading off to top business schools here in the fall. And so it was a really good group to start with.
Yeah. It's interesting stuff, and I really wish you luck, mostly just because of the size of the problem. On the way in, I said a 13.3% unemployment rate among Iraq and Afghanistan veterans, 88% of those veterans not making it through college. Those are some of the problems you're trying to solve. And, Gunnar, it's been a really interesting hour. Thanks so much for coming on.
Thanks so much, Jay. I appreciate you having me on.
And Gunnar Councilman is a former Marine Corps intelligence officer. He served in Iraq, Bosnia, and the Horn of Africa. He's now the founder and CEO of Fidelis, Inc. Thanks for listening to On DoD on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jared Serbib. So long.
You've been listening to On DoD with Federal News Radio DoD reporter Jared Serbu, sponsored by Microsoft Federal. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. On DoD, Wednesday afternoons at 2 only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.